Well, I always try to choose hymns that fit what I'm speaking on. And it's that the first line of that second verse, well, it's the first verse we sang, "Object of my first desire." Bit quaint, but what do I desire above all things? What is the biggest thing in my life, says Top Lady? Object of my first desire, Jesus crucified for me. Now, my reading is in Luke chapter 10. You will hardly need to turn it up, but you're welcome to turn it up. Luke chapter 10, and I begin at verse 38. I'm sure you will know this like the back of your hand. Luke 10 and verse 38. It's a short reading, but it's got a powerful punch, I'll tell you. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was, now if you've got the authorized there, you've got cumbered. She was cumbered, I think. Yeah. I've got distracted. She was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset." I believe the authorized says, concerned, is it? "You are concerned over many things." Trouble, careful, oh yes, right. It's all the same, worried and upset about many things. But only one thing is needed. One thing is needful. Is that what you've got? Yes. One thing is necessary. Mary has chosen what is better. The better part, I think you've got, haven't you? Yes. And it will not be taken away from her. Now, I've got two problems with this text I got for you this morning. It's not the problem that I heard a man many years ago in Wiltshire. He stood up and he started like this. His passage was Romans chapter 10, and he said words to the effect, I can't remember his exact words, his words were to the effect, "I really haven't a clue about this passage," he was saying, but, and his words were, "I'm going to venture on it." That was the quaint way they spoke from that particular brand of Christians. Well, he did venture on it. And after he ventured on it, speaking for myself, I know no more about the text from what he said than I did before. Whether he did or not, I don't know. The venture wasn't much good for me. Now, I'm not venturing on this text. I'm minded of a man called Eric Gurr, who was at one time at Melbourne Hall. And I remember something he wrote, 50 years ago, 60 years ago now, maybe more than that. And he wrote this: "It's not the things in the Bible which I don't understand which trouble me, it's the things which I do understand." Think about that. Yeah. And that's my problem with this text. Right, let's go into it then. We've got two sisters here, all right? Martha and Mary. And they're in a home together, living together. It's Martha's home, but they're living together. There's a knock at the door. Martha goes to the door. My word. And all these chaps are standing outside. I don't know, maybe some ladies as well, but a whole group of them. And of course, with Jewish hospitality, they come in and of course, they're going to have a meal. And maybe they're going to stay. Now, there's no record in my Bible that this is all planned. Now, I want you to think, you ladies particularly, we'll start with the ladies. I've got something for the men, don't worry, Bill. You're not going to get away, nor am I. The ladies, imagine, you know, if somebody turns up in a few minutes, not one, not two, half a dozen, maybe 15, 20, I don't know, and you've got to get a meal. Well, you'd be looking in the fridge, wouldn't you? You'd be scratching your head, you'd be wondering what you're going to do next, you see. But the kettle, I'm worried about it, a big kettle too, wouldn't it? Yes, right, you see. Now, this is a real issue, okay? But there's no suggestion that they won't come in. They come in, and everything's going well. But after a while, there's a little group of them in one room, and Jesus is talking to them, and one of the sisters, Mary, is sitting at Jesus' feet, listening. And the door bursts open. Now, the Greek bears this out. It's all of a sudden, this woman, Martha, rushes in. Now, you can hear her, can't you? Hey, I've only got one pair of hands. I can't do it all. And she says to Jesus, you tell her. What's she doing down there? You tell her. Get out there and help her. It's all come to me. It's already well saying, yeah, come in. But it's all fallen on me. Why me? You read the text again. Lord, don't you care? My sister's left me. Tell her to help me. Have you ever said that? Or words like that? Has anybody ever been in your home where they haven't been pulling their weight?
Just thinking, that's it.
Well,
grumbling inside.
Let me tell you a story, a true story. There was a couple that we knew who married fairly late in life. And we tried to befriend them and kind to them. And we had them to a meal. I think they may have even stayed, I'm not sure. Now, we had a policy in our house, that for the meal, my wife and I would be in the kitchen preparing it. But afterwards, if people wanted the help, they could do what the English call washing up. The Americans don't do that. They don't talk about washing up, but doing the dishes. You see, a woman likes to be in the kitchen on her own, doesn't she? She knows where things are, and she wants to get on. But you know, this couple, they didn't offer to help beforehand. And when the meal was over, what did they do? They went in the other lounge and sat on the settee and held hands. And left my wife and I to do the washing up. And my wife was angry about it. And I'll tell you what happened. They sent her a lovely card afterwards, and my wife said something like this: a half an ounce of help is worth a ton of cards. Well, I sympathise with that. Yeah. I do. And I sympathise with Martha here. And that's my first problem. You see, I've been very fortunate in my travels. I preached a fair times away, and people, even in this room here, have shown me hospitality. They put meals on the table, and I know there's more to it than it looks. I know somebody's got to peel the spuds. I know somebody's got to cut the carrots up. Somebody's got to get the salmon ready. Whatever it is, I know, and I've appreciated it. But there's work in it. Let's be clear about it. Things have to be done. I really do sympathize with Martha here. Don't you? Let's be honest. Yeah. But look at Jesus' answer. Look at Jesus' answer. Martha. Martha. He doesn't support her. I've said this to you before. The Gospels are the most difficult books in the Bible. I know headmasters and headmistresses think they're easy, and that's why they talk to children out of them. But if you can live with the Gospels, you are a better man than me, or a better woman. But you know what I mean. You're going somewhere if you can live with the Gospels. Remember that time when Jesus was in a house and somebody said, hang on, he said, your mother's outside. What did he say? Who
is my mother?
Yeah. Now you mothers, who is my mother? Yeah. Now you mothers, if you're Annette,
yeah,
or your boy,
yeah,
you know, if they said, who is my dad then? Who is my mother? And Jesus said, everybody here who does my will. Yeah. See, he isn't the Jesus that you think he is he?
Yeah.
Right. Now in this case, let's get back to our case here. He says, Martha, Martha. And he says something here very important to her. Now, here is my first problem. I'm sympathetic to Martha. And I remember hearing an internationally famous preacher preaching in Suffolk a few years back. There's a chapel in Suffolk, some of you know what I'm talking about. There's a chapel in Suffolk that on bank holidays has preaching meetings. They have one in the afternoon and they have another one in the evening. And in between, there is a sit-down, sumptuous tea. Eh? And it is a sumptuous tea. So this man was preaching in the afternoon, and he announced his text, and it was this. Now, I don't remember what he said, because I was preoccupied. I thought, I won't mention his name, I thought, you're shooting yourself in the foot, because you're going to sit down in this meal in a few minutes or an hour's time, like me. And those ladies, you know, have been doing quite a lot of sandwiches that morning, I'll tell you. Somebody's been making a few cakes. And those trifles didn't come out of the sky, you know. And all the rest of it, okay? The chairs had to be put out, didn't they? The tablecloths. Somebody's got to do it, haven't they? Somebody got this ready this morning, didn't they? Somebody learned a few lessons on the organ, didn't they? Yeah? Somebody taught us to read. You know, we've all benefited by this. So, I have this problem. But I now see what I think is the key word in this text. It is not that the service and the duty and the caring and all the preparation is wrong. It's this word, Martha, Martha, you are cumbered. She was cumbered with it. She was preoccupied with it. She couldn't think of anything else. She was distracted. You following what I'm saying? It consumed her. Now, I have met this as well. Now, don't misunderstand me, but well, you can misunderstand me if you like, but I'm trying not to be misunderstood. We all like nice meals prepared. We all want it the best we can have. But I have known ladies particularly, the gentlemen are going to get something yet, don't worry. The ladies particularly, but I have known ladies who have been very house proud. And so preoccupied with the house, everything neat in its place. Well, there's a place for it. But when it becomes a preoccupation, when it occupies our mind so much that it hinders us from something bigger, then the words of Jesus come in. You take meals. Now, my friend, I'm not saying it's got to be beans on toast every time, but I tell you this, beans on toast is one of the most nutritious meals you'll ever eat, as a matter of fact. I'm not saying it should be beans on toast every time, but if you're going to get every meal like they got them on the telly, you know, with every little preparation and every little herb and everything else all laid out and you're preoccupied with it, you can spend hours in that kitchen and there's still no more calories in it, there's still no more nutrients in it, there's still no more goodness in it than bread and cheese and pickled onions. In other words, I think the first part of this text to me is this, get your priorities right. And it's not just bread and cheese, you know. See, there's one of the gentlemen come in as well. It's throughout life. Let me give you an example of what I'm trying to talk about. I know at the moment a couple believers. They're in their 80s. The wife has got dementia and she's in a home. The husband, he was a minister of the gospel. Now, what does his life consist of now? As far as I can judge, it consists of two things. His love of model railways and his care for his money. He goes to the bank every day, and gets a bank statement from the hole in the wall. And then he goes inside and he gets another statement from the same bank for the same account because that statement is slightly different. And he does that every day. Don't you think this is getting a bit excessive? Don't you think there's something more in life than dividends and shares and scrips and bank balances and accounts? I know we have to have money and I know we've got to deal with it. Don't be silly. I know that. But does it consume us? Is that all I can think about? I know a man, he's dead now. He wasn't a believer. He was 98, at least, but I mean 96, 97, but I think he was 98. He was getting on towards that. And his life consisted of this. He took the money magazines, and he had a friend, and they would discuss money, money, money. He had it coming out of his ears anyway, but money. And what he was especially concerned about was getting a bond which would pay an extra 0.5%. But to do that, he had to have 10-year bonds. Hang on. He's 98. A 10-year bond? What's he thinking of? That man was an unbeliever. And that takes me to a great application here. Now, let's see if you can quote it with me. I'm sure you can. What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Preoccupied with this world, made a mint, not knowing what to do with it, can't sleep at night because he's worrying about another 0.5%, and yet he's lost his soul. Now, if any unbeliever is listening to this, that's the first lesson from Mary and Martha. Mary had chosen the better part, Christ. Martha was too occupied with the bread and cheese. It's Bunyan's muckraker again. You remember? He cannot see the crown because he's looking down. In Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, there's a muckraker. He cannot see the crown just above his head. Object of my first desire, Jesus. Not house proud, not money, not whatever it might be. Some men make a god of their car, whatever it might be. Can you see what the first lesson is here? This is a tremendous challenge to me. I can be occupied, preoccupied, distracted by many material things. You remember what Jesus says in the parable of the sower. He says the seed is sown in the ground, but it doesn't come to anything because the thorns and the thistles, the brambles, crowd it out. What did he say they were? They are the cares of this world. My friends, of course we got to live in the world, and of course we got cares. But my first appeal to you, as it is to me first. This is a difficult text to preach. Not because I don't understand it, but because I do. Jesus is saying to me, yes, don't be cumbered with this life. Don't be cumbered with it. Keep it at a distance. Now I'm going to cut even deeper. Spurgeon, when he preached on this text, opened like this. He said, I got a problem tonight. Well, I started like that. My problem is, they said, with this text, because he said, I'm having to preach to myself. He said, distracted, cumbered. He said, and he moved on to spiritual distractions. Straight away. I've talked about earthly distractions, and they're real. But even more powerful to me is this question of spiritual distractions. What do you mean? Spurgeon said, well, I've got this college. Remember, he ran a college. I've got to think about the college, the lectures, the students, the money. I can get distracted with that. Then he ran a magazine, a monthly magazine. Think of the work involved in that. Then he was preaching, time and again a week, revising his sermons, writing books, interviewing people, having conversations, writing letters. I don't know. And he said, even when I'm preaching, he said, even when I'm in the pulpit here, he said, I'm distracted. There's a story he tells. I think Audrey may know it because she's quoted about this to me before. And I think it's the same time. He was preaching one night and he said, I had 7 lines of thought coming through my head at once. He said, there was a lady over there fainting, and I thought, will the deacon see her and help her? Then I thought, the window should be open. And then I thought, and he was going on like that. He had these 7 thoughts going through his mind. And then all of a sudden, the gas went out.
There was darkness.
Yeah. And before that, before he started to preach, in the hymn, before they were, he had his Bible open, but his eyes fell on the opposite side of the page. And that text on that opposite page from where he was going to preach from, that text, he said, jumped out of there, he said, like a lion out of a thicket. And it said, preach me. And he said, well, I can't preach you. I prepared this. Preach me, it said. So he said, they were singing and I was sighing. See, he's distracted. But he said, I'm going to have a go. And he did, and he preached. The gas went out the gas went and the lights went out. So he preached two sermons that night. The first one, this part made up one, this new one. And then he said, well, it's dark. He said, well, now the children of light often walk in darkness. And the children of darkness are often seeming to be in light. And he talked on that for a few minutes. And suddenly the gas came on again and everybody was looking. He said, the funny thing was, he said a few weeks later, people came forward to be baptized, to be added to the church. He said, some dated their conversion to the first half, and some dated their conversion to the second half. But you can see what he was meaning. I can be distracted. You understand, when a man's preaching, he's got many things to be thinking about. And Spurgeon said, I don't want to be distracted. I want to give my mind and my heart to the one thing. Now I'm going to show you how I rebuke myself from this text. I can see myself in the day of judgment. And I can see Christ saying this to me. David, all those sermons, really good. I was really pleased with that. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, and all those books too, really pleased about that. And all those audios, yeah. But I wish you could have be more devoted to me. My son, give me thine heart. I want your activities. I want your service. I want your labors. Yeah, of course I do. But Jesus wants me more than he wants my labors. I'm being honest with you. I'm being frank with you. This rebukes me shockingly. I'm rebuked by Anne of Green Gables. I've told you this before. It's not in the books, but it's in the DVD. You remember when Anne meets Gilbert on the bridge? Very last scene in the sequel. Remember, he's been chasing her for years, wanting her. And she's been resisting. She's been out in fairyland, you know, very fairy. Remember Gilbert on the bridge says, Anne, he said, I can't give you sun-filled palaces. And she says, Gilbert, I don't want sun-filled palaces. I want you. Jesus wants me. I quoted just now, the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I believe Jesus is saying to me, David, love me. Give yourself to me. Don't give yourself to my work. Don't make an idol of that. Don't be distracted by that. Don't you find that's a challenge? I do. Too busy. Then you're too busy, my friend. Too busy. I want to be devoted to Christ. Now, I know I've failed. So I'm going to call on, very briefly at the end here, three gentlemen to help me. Unfortunately, these gentlemen are all dead. But I can call upon them. And you will know, at least, I think you will know, some of you will know them all. But here's the first one. The first gentleman I've got is Philip Doddridge. Okay? Does this help? Does this make the point I'm trying to make this morning? This is how he prayed. Engage this roving, treacherous heart to fix on Mary's better part. To scorn the trifles of a day for joys that none can take away. You see what Doddridge is praying? Mary's chosen the better part. She wants to be with me. She wants to be listening to me. She wants to be given up to me. Your work is necessary, Martha. But don't you see there's a better choice? That's what Doddridge is praying. Well, that didn't work. All right, let's try this one. That did work. All right, it did. All right, let's see if Samuel Medley can do any better. Eh? Now, remember some of you last week in the Bible study, Michael said about hymn writers who often wrote hymns in the week to fit their sermons. And this is one such. You can hear Medley's text. It's my text, One Thing Needful. And he wrote this hymn. Now, I've got a friend in War Boys, an older man, older than me, in his 90s, and so on. And if I ever choose this hymn when I'm there, he'll say, that's my hymn. Why? Now, because when in his life he was an engraver. He engraved cups and medals and stuff. And this is the engraver's hymn. Perhaps you know it. Jesus, engrave it on my heart, that thou the one thing needful art. Now here's a searching line. Listen to this one. I could from all things parted be, but never, never, Lord, from thee. And he goes on in six verses. Needful, needful, needful. In living, in dying, in health, in sickness, whatever. Needful, needful, needful. Needful art thou to raise my dust. Needful, I need you everywhere. Yeah. I need thee. Oh, I need thee every hour. I need thee. Every hour. Mary's chosen the better part. Well, that didn't work. Let's try another one. Here's the best of all. Charles Wesley. And I'll finish, don't worry. I can't quote it all, but I can quote some of it. Oh, love divine, how sweet thou art. When shall I find my willing heart, or love longing heart, all taken up with thee? I thirst, I faint, I die to prove the greatness of redeeming love, the love of Christ to me. God only knows the love of God. Oh, that it now were shed abroad in this poor stony heart. For love, I sigh. He's a grown man. For love I pine, this only portion, Lord, be mine this better part. Now, we're going to sing this hymn in a moment, but our version does not have this verse. Oh, that I could with favoured John recline my weary head upon the dear Redeemer's breast. From care and sin and sorrow free, give me, O Lord, to find in thee my everlasting rest. There's a verse in this version, because he wrote many more verses than you get in the hymn books. There's a verse in this version which doesn't come in that one. Stronger his love than death or hell. Its riches are unsearchable. Don't you want to know this? I do. The firstborn sons of light desire in vain its depths to see. They cannot reach the mystery, the length and breadth and height. But the verse above all, and that's why I've chosen these hymns today, because it's here. In the other hymn book, this verse is missing. This is the verse I want. Oh, that I could forever sit with Mary at the Master's feet. Be this my happy choice, my only care, delight and bliss, my joy, my heaven on earth be this, to hear the bridegroom's voice. It's a terrific text, isn't it? Mary has chosen the better part. God give us all the grace to choose the better part. Oh, that some unbeliever might hear this and realize that the toys of this world don't count at all. It's Christ. And may we all, my brothers and sisters, though we have many cares and concerns, make Christ our chief concern, our chief desire. May God bless that thought to us all. Amen. Amen.